Good morning, church. If you would, stay in the book of Mark, and that is where we will be most of the sermon this morning. I want to start off by telling you about a little bit of research that I was doing, and hopefully it'll make sense as I go along. But I did a search on Amazon.com in the biography section of their books, and I only looked for books that had been published since 2009, so a little bit over a year, and I looked for biographies about Abraham Lincoln that have been published since 2009. And I don't know how many books you think may have been published since 2009 about Abraham Lincoln, but when I did that search on Amazon, I came up with 422 books. And here are just a few of them that were there. 422 books about someone who has been dead for over 100 years. And these are just books that have been written in the last year or so. Why do we need more than one book about Abraham Lincoln? Don't we already know everything about him? We already know, you know, when he was born and when he died. We know when he was president. We know who his cabinet members were. We know, you know, the major things, the Gettysburg Address, the Emancipation Proclamation, all those things. Don't we just need one book that gives us all the facts about Abraham Lincoln? And why are there so many books being written about Abraham Lincoln? Well, part of the reason is that a lot of the biographies being written about Abraham Lincoln are focusing on particular aspects of Lincoln. They're not trying to be overall, you know, the bland histories that just go, he was born here, and he did this then, and he did this that. They're looking at small parts of Lincoln as a way to understand Lincoln as a whole. So you have books about Lincoln when he was a lawyer, before he was president, and how that formed him and how that informed his presidency. You have books about how his marriage with Mary Todd, a crazy woman by all accounts, affected him and his presidency as well. Or you have books based upon his political decisions, how he took various factions of the Republican Party and made them all work for him in his cabinet. Or you have books about the Gettysburg Address or the Emancipation Proclamation. Or you have books focusing on Lincoln as a leader or Lincoln as a diplomat or Lincoln as, you know, one thing or another. And each of these authors are taking a more focused look at the man, Abraham Lincoln, and are saying, if you take a look at this, you become more informed about him as a whole. That just knowing the whole doesn't give you the full picture of who Abraham Lincoln was. And so that's why we have, you know, books just constantly being published about what is usually considered our best president. You've heard the expression that you can miss the forest, or you can't see the forest for the trees, right? And the meaning behind that is that sometimes we can get so focused on the details that we miss the big picture. Well, I'm going to submit that sometimes we're so focused on the big picture that we miss the details, that we can't see that the forest is actually made of trees. This is a very famous forest, very famous for its trees. Anybody know what forest this is? If we just look at the big picture, we have no idea. This is the Redwood National Park. But if we just had the big picture, we miss the fact that it's made of redwoods. So what this introduction is kind of bringing us to this idea of when we study the Gospels, when we're looking at who Jesus is and what the Gospels teach us about Jesus. Oftentimes when we study the Gospels, we take all four Gospels and we combine them together, and then we try to see what does this amalgamation tell us about Jesus. And that's good in certain instances, because different Gospels will tell the same story from different angles, and when you put all the angles together, you get a good composite picture of Jesus. But that's not just all that the Gospels are useful for when we combine them all together. Each Gospel was written by a different man with a different audience in mind, and thus a different perspective or a different focus in Jesus and his life and his teachings. Just as we looked at all those different books on Lincoln, they're coming at Lincoln from a different perspective to give you a better picture of who he is. And thus, each gospel is giving us a different slice of Jesus to help us better understand him. And if we only take Jesus as the composite picture of the gospel, sometimes we miss some of the details. Sometimes we miss the fact that the forest is made of redwoods. And so the portrait of Jesus that each gospel writer makes is different. It's not that they're giving us contrary visions, or that one is more correct than the other, or that one is more complete than the other. It's like if you asked four different painters to paint the same person, you're going to come up with four different portraits. They're all the same person, they're all paintings, but they're all different. They all give you a different idea. They give you a different perspective. They give you a different focus. And so I'm using this to impress upon you the importance not only of studying the Gospels as a complete whole, but each Gospel is an independent account of Jesus. And when you actually go in and you look at each individual Gospel, aspects about Jesus' character and aspects about Jesus' teachings boil to the surface that maybe you didn't see when you were just looking at the surface as a whole. And so this morning we're going to look at one gospel in particular, the Gospel of Mark. And there are a couple reasons why I chose the Gospel of Mark. First, Mark is usually the gospel that's left out, because Mark is overshadowed by Matthew. Almost everything that is in Mark can be found in Matthew. And Matthew is longer, and Matthew has those sermons that we like a lot, and Mark doesn't have those. So oftentimes, and then Mark's stories are also shorter. So oftentimes when we want to explore a certain story, we go to Matthew instead of Mark. But then also, I'm just picking Mark as well to show you the importance of studying a gospel individually. I'm going to show you some things that are unique to Mark that you would not get from an overall study of all four gospels or a study of the other gospels. Mark gives you a unique view of Jesus. I'm only going to show you a couple of those things. And I would encourage you, in your own study, go through gospels individually. See what they show you about Jesus individually. I think you'll be surprised sometimes. So, first off, as I mentioned before, you have all these books about Lincoln. We have these four gospels, and they're written by authors with different intentions in mind. So, let's start by examining the author of the Gospel of Mark, who is John Mark. And this here is a sculpture by the Ninja Turtle Donatello. The master sculptor Donatello, that's in Florence. But anyway, there are a few things I want to say about John Mark at first, and about all the Gospels, actually. If you notice the Gospels, if you read the Gospels, they never identify who the author is within the Gospel. They don't identify themselves like Paul identifies himself in the letter. Paul's letters start with Paul, an apostle, or something along those lines. None of the Gospels identify themselves that way. The authors that we ascribe to these Gospels come to us from a couple of generations after they were written. And without getting into a big, long, detailed explanation of all these things, I'll just give the Cliff's Notes version of this. The authors of these various Gospels come to us at an early date. They're universally accepted by all Christians early on. There are no disputes about who might have actually written Mark. Everybody says Mark wrote Mark. Everybody says Matthew wrote Matthew. There are no controversies about it. The controversies about the authors of the Gospel are a modern invention. because we like to doubt everything in this modern world. But just to give you a few things, Mark, that we get from outside the Bible, from traditions that came pretty early. Mark was an interpreter of the Apostle Peter, at some point while Peter was in Rome. And it's said that Mark composed his gospel mostly from Peter's recollections and Peter's sermons about Jesus. And then at some point, Mark left Rome and went to Alexandria in Egypt, where he died in 64 AD. And the unanimous consent of early history is that John Mark wrote the gospel. So what do we get from the New Testament about this man named John Mark? First, looking at his family, and hopefully you can read that. We're not going to go through all of these scriptures, but Mark was possibly from a wealthy family. We're told in Acts 12:12 that his mother Mary had a house in Jerusalem where there were a large gathering of Christians. And so so she probably had a large house, and so that probably indicated that she was wealthy. He was also the cousin of Barnabas, who we know is also a wealthy Cyprian. So Mark seems to have come from a wealthy family. There's some speculation that the Last Supper actually took place in Mary, the mother of Mark's home. And this kind of comes from an account, a small account, that if you're just reading in Mark chapter 14, you'll just look over. But I want to look at Mark 14 and verse 51 and 52. Some speculate that this is Mark inserting himself in the gospel narrative. He would have been just a young, probably a teenager at the time that this happened. Looking at Mark 14, I need to get in the right chapter. 14, 51, and 52, and this is one of the funniest passages in the Bible, I think. So this is in the Garden of Gethsemane when Jesus is arrested, and then in the middle of this story, there's an aside, and in verse 51, a young man was following him, that's Jesus, wearing nothing but a linen sheet over his naked body, and they seized him, and he pulled free of the linen sheet and escaped naked. And that's all that's said about that young man. And that's not mentioned anywhere in any of the other Gospels. The thought is that Mark is laying bare his, no pun intended, laying bare his embarrassing moment at the Garden of Gethsemane. I'm not sure that it is him, but I'm not sure who else it would be other than the author in that case. But anyway, it's just an interesting aspect of Mark that you don't get in any other gospel. Another thing about Mark is that he traveled with Paul and Barnabas. He left halfway through the first missionary journey, which led to tension between Paul and Barnabas. And then on Paul's second missionary journey, Barnabas goes along with John Mark to Cyprus. Now, depending upon, I think, your attitude as a person, you either believe Paul is in the right and Mark is in the wrong, or you believe Mark is in the right and Paul is in the wrong. And I think that just has to do with, you know, certain people's attitudes about how they feel about quitters. If they feel the same way that Paul feels about quitters, or if they feel like, well, you know, sometimes things come up. Who knows why Mark left, you know, Paul and Barnabas halfway through the first missionary journey. Maybe he had good reasons. But anyway, that we can argue about that all. But we can also say from Paul's later writings that Paul, whatever disputes or bad feelings he had about Mark right then that caused the division between Paul and Barnabas after the first missionary journey, that seems to have gone away. And Paul talks very highly of Mark, especially in 2 Timothy 4 and verse 11, near the end of Paul's life. But not only did John Mark travel with Paul and Barnabas at various times, but John Mark also traveled and accompanied Peter. In 1 Peter 5 and 13, Peter calls Mark his son. And so that tends to make people think that maybe Peter was instrumental in converting Mark. as Paul talks about Timothy and Titus as his sons. Peter says uses the same language about Mark. And then Peter also in that same verse, 1 Peter 5 and 13, mentions that they're in Babylon, and some people think that that is meaning Babylon, Babylon. I'm more intended, or more inclined to believe that that's code for Rome. But we can, that's a whole other topic as well. But okay, so what we've gone through, this is all that we have about John Mark in the New Testament. And a couple things that we can see. John Mark has experience with some of the pillars of the early Christianity. He traveled with Paul, he traveled with Barnabas, he traveled with Peter, he heard, and he possibly also heard a little bit of Jesus, if he is the young man that's mentioned in Mark chapter 14. So Mark is in, or has had opportunity to listen to these great teachers. But then also Mark is someone who is not unaccustomed to controversy as well, as we saw with the problems between Paul and Barnabas. Excuse me. So now let's get into the Gospel of Mark proper. I want you to put yourself back in the first century as one of the first recipients of Mark's Gospel. Most likely Mark's Gospel was the first Gospel to be written. And so I want you to think about this as well, is that no other Gospel has been written yet. Mark and Luke and John have still yet to write their Gospels. So your only impression of Jesus comes from Mark's Gospel. There's also a couple, so what is Mark trying to tell you? What is this Gospel trying to say to you? What are you going to learn from it? What is Mark trying to teach you? I want you also to remember that in Mark's day, and this is true for all the Gospels, only about 5% of the population could read. Most everyone was illiterate. And so the Gospel of Mark, as most all the Gospels, as well as the letters of Paul, were intended originally to be read aloud in full. And this is something that I would encourage you to do as well. Just ignore the chapter divisions, ignore the verse divisions, because those weren't there when Mark wrote it. Mark didn't write in chapters and verses. And just, if you can find about an hour and a half of time, just read through Mark. Just go the whole way through. Because that's how it was originally intended. Now, the fact that Mark wrote it down, he also intended for it to also be go back and studied as well. But Mark isn't all that long. And so Mark intended it to be mainly for oral use. And so Mark uses various literary techniques, like especially repetition, to reinforce certain ideas that he wants you to understand as you're listening to the story. And there are three things that come up in Mark's Gospel, and there are so many more that I could point out, but there are three unique things that I want to examine this morning that point to the theme, what Mark wants you to learn from reading or listening to his Gospel. And I'm going to take these three things, and they all point to the same thing. So I'm going to introduce all three of them and kind of leave them hanging, and then I'll bring them all together. So I encourage you to use your oral listening skills and try to remember these things as we go through it. First, I want you to notice how Mark begins his Gospel. In Mark chapter 1, verse 1, he says, "The beginning of the Gospel of Jesus Christ, the Son of God." Mark begins his Gospel by stating up front what he believes about Christ. And there, it's twofold. First, he says that Jesus is Christ. Christ isn't Jesus' name. Christ is a title. It's the Greek term meaning the anointed one. It means the Messiah. Jesus is the fulfillment of Jewish scripture. But then also Mark says, Jesus is the Son of God. Mark begins his Gospel in such a way, he says, I'm going to show you how Jesus is the Christ and how Jesus is the Son of God. But when you start to read the Gospel of Mark, you notice that nobody else other than Jesus and the Father seem to know that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. Everybody else is confused about who Jesus is. Jesus does all these things, and Jesus and this will actually listening to this story, as you're reading this story, you begin to wonder, who is this Jesus? What is he? Is he in fact what Mark says he is at the beginning of the gospel? Related to this point is Mark's focus on Jesus' secrecy. Now this comes up in the other gospels occasionally, but it comes up so much more in Mark. More than in any other gospel, Jesus tells people not to talk. And you can see this in the end of Mark chapter 1, just an example, in 40 through 45. Mark 1, 40 through 45. And a leper came to Jesus, beseeching him and falling on his knees before him and saying, "If you are willing, you can make me clean." And moved with compassion, Jesus stretched out his hand and touched him and said to him, "I am willing, be cleansed." And immediately the leprosy left him and he was cleansed. And he sternly warned him and immediately sent him away. And he said to him, "See that you say nothing to anyone, but go show yourself to the priest and offer for your cleansing that Moses commanded as a testimony to them." But he went out and began to proclaim it freely and to spread the news around to such an extent that Jesus could no longer publicly enter a city, but stayed out in unpopulated areas, and they were coming to him from everywhere. This happens over and over again in Mark. Jesus healing somebody, telling them not to tell anybody, then they go out and tell everybody, and then Jesus... And there are some things that we can say about this. Some people say, okay, well, did Jesus really want it to be quiet, or was Jesus using reverse psychology to, you know, actually... because he knew that they were going to say anyway. We're not going to explore that fact, but I want you just to think about the fact that Mark focuses so much on Jesus wanting to keep the secret of who he is, of what he does. This adds to the mystery of who Jesus is in Mark's gospel. As I was saying, you get a different idea of Jesus. This idea comes up in other gospels, but not so nearly as prevalent as in Mark's. Why is Jesus so concerned about being secret? Is he using reverse psychology? Or is he being thwarted by the very people that he's healing? And as we saw at the end of chapter 1, he can't go into the cities anymore. Now he has to be out in the unpopulated areas. Or was that what he wanted all in the first place? These are the things Mark wants you to think about this. Who is Jesus? Why is he doing these things? And the very fact that Jesus is keeping these secrets, asking people to keep these secrets, reveals that there is more to him than just what's on the surface. Reveals that Jesus is more than just an ordinary man. And the third unique aspect of Mark that I want us to consider is Mark's pace. Excuse me. Mark is by far the shortest gospel, but also Mark is a very fast-paced book. He uses the term immediately more than 40 times. If you notice, if you just look through chapter 1, verse 10, verse 12, verse 18, verse 20, verse 28, verse 29, verse 42, immediately, 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 it goes from one event to the next. And Mark doesn't slow down. Mark is Jesus, the Gospel of Mark is Jesus going from one healing to one teaching to the next. Immediately, immediately, immediately. Jesus is just a whirlwind of activity. And notice also that Mark doesn't start with the birth narrative like Matthew or Luke. Mark just starts right off with the baptism of Jesus, and then from then on, Jesus is just going. And for 10 chapters, Mark covers what he sees as the highlights of Jesus' ministry, and which lasted for about 3 years or so. So Mark is covering the span of 3 years in 10 chapters, just going from one event to the next, to the next, to the next.
And then Mark slows down. Because in the next six chapters, the last six chapters, he spends on 1 week of Jesus' life. I want you to think about this. Mark is so anxious, you know, to get, he doesn't even spend any time with Jesus' life before he's baptized. As soon as Jesus is baptized, it's just one event to the next, to the next, to the next for Mark. Until we get to the last week of Jesus' life. And then Mark spends almost half of his book on just 1 week. And actually, that's not really unique to Mark. All the Gospels do that. They slow down once they get to the last week of Jesus' life. Why is that? Mark, who seems to be such a fast-paced person, why does he slow down? Doesn't that tell you how much Mark thinks this last week is important to him, to you? Well, obviously, Mark's emphasis on the last week of Jesus' life means that this is a very important part of the story of Jesus to Mark. And this is the part that he wants you to focus on. And so I want to bring back these parts that I left hanging. Why does Mark spend so much time on the last week of Jesus' life? Why does he spend so much time on the trial and the death of Jesus? This comes back to the question that Jesus' secrecy that comes up over and over in Mark again. Who is Jesus? Why is he important? It's not a secret to Mark. We saw in verse 1 of chapter 1, Mark already knows who Jesus is. But he wants you to find out who he is. To everybody else in the Gospel of Mark, it's a mystery. Who is Jesus? Why is he important? I want us to bring back to think about Mark's introduction. Mark introduced us to two aspects of Jesus Christ. First, that he was the Christ, and that he was the Son of God. But everybody else in the gospel doesn't see it until we get to chapter 8. In chapter 8 of Mark, if you would turn there, just about halfway, right, just smack dab in the middle of Mark, Jesus asked the question that comes up in other Gospels as well, starting in verse 27 of chapter 8. Jesus went out, along with his disciples, to the villages of Caesarea Philippi. And on the way, he questioned his disciples, saying to them, "Who do people say that I am?" They told him, saying, "John the Baptist, and others say Elijah, but others one of the prophets." And he continued by questioning them, "But who do you say that I am?" And then Peter answered and said to him, "You are the Christ." This is important. Because here's the first time where one of the characters other than God the Father recognizes one of the aspects of Jesus. Halfway through the Gospel of Mark, some of the people are getting it. They understand Jesus is the Christ. Now what about the other part? Almost near the end, Mark 15, 39. "And when the centurion who was standing right in front of him saw the way he breathed his last, he said, 'Truly, this man was the Son of God.'" The Gospel of Mark is not just about Jesus being Christ and the Son of God, but Jesus revealing himself to man as Christ and the Son of God. Why was Jesus, you know, so secretive about who he was? He's revealing himself. At a certain point in time, people like Peter and this Roman centurion, after time, once they see it, once the secret has been revealed, they see it. Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. Just as Mark said he was going to declare at the beginning. And so this is what the entire book of Mark is based on, is focused on. Wants you to see. And through his unique focus on Jesus, he wants to show you that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. Mark wants you to see it just as clearly as Peter saw it. Just as clearly as the Roman centurion saw it. But not only that, Mark's gospel declares something grander. If you would, turn to Mark 16. It's not just that Jesus is the Son of God, the Christ, the Son of God, and that his last week and his death were important, but what comes after his death? Mark 16, starting in verse 1. When the Sabbath was over, Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of James and Salome, brought spices so that they might come and anoint him. Very early on the first day of the week, they came to the tomb when the sun had risen. And they were saying to one another, "Who will roll away the stone for us from the entrance of the tomb?" And looking up, they saw that the stone had been rolled away. Although it was extremely large, entering the tomb, they saw a young man sitting at the right, wearing a white robe, and they were amazed. And he said to them, "Do not be amazed. You are looking for Jesus the Nazarene, who has been crucified. He is risen. He is not here." And this is what is important to Mark. And he goes on further in verses 14 and through 16. "Afterwards, he," that is Jesus, "appeared to the 11 themselves as they were reclining at the table. And he reproached them for their unbelief and hardness of heart, because they had not believed those who had seen him after he had risen." This is all about who is Jesus. They didn't believe, but now they saw them. "And he said to them, 'Go into all the world and preach the gospel to all creation. He who has believed and has been baptized shall be saved, and he who has disbelieved shall be condemned.'" The point, the theme of Mark's gospel is not just, it is about Jesus. Jesus is the Christ. Jesus is the Son of God. But also, Jesus is the way to salvation because he rose from the dead. And so the question I want to ask you this morning is, do you want to be saved? Do you believe that Jesus is the Christ? And that Jesus is the Son of God? This is what Mark wants you to believe. This is the whole point why he wrote his gospel. To bring you to the point of belief in Jesus as the Christ and Son of God, and then put action behind that belief. Be baptized. Believe and be baptized. And you'll be saved from your sins. You can accept Jesus, the Christ, the Son of God, as your Savior. Be buried with him in baptism and rise again as a new creature, as a child of God. Jesus no longer has to be a secret to you. He's been revealed by Mark and by the other Gospels as well. So will you not heed Jesus' call? If you need to be baptized, if you need to be set right in God's sight, please come forward as we stand and sing.
I heard the voice of Jesus say, "Come unto me and rest. Lay down the weary one, lay down thy head upon my breast. I came to be the Oh.